What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Grabs Podcast. If you're listening to this, you probably already know what we do here. But in case you stumbled in or this is the first one you're hearing, our goal here is simple. It's to highlight our wins and learn as much as we can from actual fireground rescues in the hopes of making us all a little bit smarter, more effective, and more efficient. Our guest today is Andy Welsh, a firefighter for the Adams County Fire Rescue in outside of Denver. And we're fortunate enough to hear his powerful story so that we can all learn from his experience. Thank you so much for coming on today, Andy. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Nick.
Yeah. Can you tell us, as we started here, can you tell us a little bit about yourself, your journey, your experience, and your department?
Yeah, so I started in fire and EMS in December of 2014. I've kind of been all over the map. I'm originally an East Coast guy. I grew up in New Jersey, and I started volunteering there. Moved to the Denver area in 2018. For a bunch of different reasons, but primarily I was looking to get into the career fire service. Just where I came, there wasn't a whole lot of career opportunities, and in looking for a change of lifestyle and everything else, Denver is kind of where I wound up. When I came to Denver, I started volunteering with Pleasant View Fire Department, as well as working part-time with Gailton Fire Protection District. From there, I got hired full-time at Louisville Fire Protection District, spent 3 years there. And then just recently in the last 6 months, I lateraled over to Adams County Fire Rescue. So grand total, I'm going on, I don't know, 9, 10-ish years in the fire service.
Okay, and we're a probie at Adams County right now, if you've been there for 6 months-ish?
That's correct.
All right. This one's a little bit nebulous, but can you tell us a little bit what the search culture is like within your department? What I mean by that is kind of who typically does the searching, how many crews are searching, and then where do you guys prioritize search?
So again, probie, still kind of learning a little bit about how everything gets run, but everything is very, we try to move pretty quick. So we have 4 houses in our district. Each one has a medic unit attached to it. So if you are the first arriving engine and medic unit, you get married up together. So in my particular instance, I'm at station 14. If engine 14 and medic 14 get to the fire scene together, they are both considered engine 14. The search culture in general, we try to do everything as quick as possible. So if we're doing a targeted search, it's the expectation of the hose team to start doing a search off the hose line in the fire room until the next arriving unit comes in, and then a full primary search can be completed, it kind of depends upon the situation. If we know if there's parties trapped, things tend to move a little bit quicker, and we're fortunate enough in our area to have responding units that are minutes behind, so it all happens pretty quick.
Okay, sounds like a pretty healthy search culture for you guys.
Yeah.
As much as we're interested in the product, we're as much interested, if not more, in the process. I know we've only been there for 6 months, but what was search training like in your academy, if you guys had an academy? And do you know how much, how often you guys do search training annually or every handful of years?
I can't really say as to how many times that we do it, but on a company level, it's something that we try to practice fairly regularly. And again, like I said, we try to be as quick and efficient as possible. So when we're practicing, pulling hose, or if we're practicing anything like that, we try to incorporate search into it as well. There is also a number of times where we practice our VEIS and just our search tactics in general. But department wide, I can't necessarily speak for how many times that we would do like full department wide search trainings. Just I haven't been there a full year yet, so I'm still figuring it out.
Sure. Did you have any type of academy there or?
Yeah. We had an 8-week fire lateral academy, and we always practice it as, first crew goes in, puts the fire out, moves to the fire room, and then you start searching from there. Next incoming unit would do a primary search from there.
Okay. And you guys did that a handful of times in your academy as well?
Plenty.
I love that. I think if we could parse out anything that has the highest return on investment, for organizations, I think it's just the amount of search training that people have, I would imagine, leads to the best amount of success on the fire ground.
I agree.
All right, let's start talking about this incident now. Can you tell us, we're going to set this up first. What's the first alarm assignment consist of for you guys for a single family dwelling?
Single family dwelling, you're going to get four engines, two medics, a truck, a battalion chief, and a SAM officer. And for those who might not know, a SAM officer, SAM stands for safety and medical. So it is a fire officer, generally lieutenant level. And they're also paramedics on scene. And they, you know, when they get attached to an incident, they're typically the safety officer for that scene. And then on medical calls, they help out there, whether it's for charting, reporting, DOAs, stuff like that, or just a second set of hands as a paramedic.
All right, beautiful. Now, can you tell us a little bit about the rescue that you made? And I'm going to smuggle in a whole bunch of stuff here, but do you know the date, the time of day, what it was dispatched as, reports of victims, anything else to kind of paint this picture?
I could look back at the calendar, which I don't have in front of me, but it was three shifts ago, end of January. It was one of those calls that every fire chief, when you walk in on your orientation day, says you got to be ready for. So we do shift change at 0700. Standard practice is to get there a little bit early, at least a half an hour early. So I started my shift change at 6:20 that morning. And at 7:01, we got dispatched to a structure fire in my station's district. Reports of fire scene and potential parties trapped. So we were the first responding unit. And kind of like I said, our engine and medic crew got married up. We got there. The officer does 360. We have fire blowing out one of the bedroom windows. So to kind of paint the picture of the house, if you were looking at the front yard of this house and you broke the house up into thirds, the left third had the front door. There was a center bedroom window. And on the far right side, there was another bedroom window. So as we're pulling up, we've got fire blowing out that center section bedroom window. The officer told the backseat firefighter and the engineer to pull a line to start a transitional attack. We had three on the engine that day, and that we were going to come up and start the search. So we followed up. Our initial plan was to go for the front door. When we got there, there was an RP saying, "Hey, grandma's inside. This is 40-year-old grandson that lives and helps out with grandma." He says, "Grandma's in the bedroom window." The grandma's bedroom was on that far right bedroom. They had already broken out the window to try to maintain contact with her, get her to come outside, but they couldn't find her. They went around to the Charlie side, broke out the sliding glass door. There was also another door on the Bravo side that leads down into the basement and into the kitchen area. So they're starting to put the fire out. We go for the front door. As we're going for the front door, we get told, "Hey, there's a drop bar on the front door. Don't bother." Okay. So we walk around to the Charlie side where the sliding glass door had already been broken out. We had to remove some dining room furniture to be able to get in there. And I mean, this is a tight 900 square foot house, super compartmentalized, not necessarily a hoarder house, but there was just a lot of stuff in there and it was just generally tight. So we followed the firefighter with the nozzle in. Fire was blowing down. Like I said, it was coming out the bedroom window when we got there. She made the transitional, moved around to the back. There was still fire in the hallway. Went through the dining room. She made a knock in the hallway, pushed in for the fire room. And then myself and my paramedic partner, because I was on the medic unit that day, continued on for the search. My paramedic partner found her bedroom door and said, and visibility was zero, but the heat was not that bad. He said, "Hey, I found the bedroom. I'm going to dump in and look for her on the bed." I said, "Okay." Made a quick sweep for the hallway, and I found her at the end of the hallway. I told my partner, "Hey, I found her. My radio was broken. I got handed off a radio that just so happened to have a bad battery that day." So he radioed over saying, "Hey, we got the victim. We're going to come out the door that we came." I picked her up and I tried using the armbar tactic, as most people call it, where you kind of take the forearm, put it across the chest, and then go underneath the armpit and grab. As I picked her up, I started moving. My partner then came, picked her up by the knees a little bit just to get her butt up off the ground. And remember, this is like a super compartmentalized house and the hallway is probably the width of my shoulders. So it was tight getting her out. We got to the end of the hallway. She was super slippery and wound up slipping out of my arms. But by that point, we were already in the dining room and I could see the door out. So I just gave her a big old bear hug and took her out onto the back patio where we started to work her and then handed her off to the next medic crew.
How large was the victim?
Probably maybe like 5'4" and maybe like 170 pounds, something like that. There was not really a whole lot to her per se, but all of her weight was definitely in her stomach section. So as I had her up, I mean, all the weight was sitting literally right below me. And there was a point when she was slipping where I thought about just saying, you know what, forget it. Just drop her ankles, leave her on the ground, and I'll just drag her out. But since it was so tight and we were going over the hose line, pretty much crawling over each other at that point, it was definitely beneficial for my paramedic partner to have had her pick her up off the ground a little bit because it just made it move that much faster.
Now, you're pretty fit. I know the people can't see you, but I can see you right now. You're pretty fit. How important was it to be in good shape for this operation? Did that affect anything? Was that a factor?
I mean, there's so many people that are different shapes and sizes, have different strengths and weaknesses and whatnot. I think it was definitely beneficial for me at this stage of the game because once the rescue had been handed off to the next crew, we were able to go in and finish the job. And by the time the fire was under control, I had, you know, I was at maybe half a bottle breathed down, just maybe even a little bit above that. So we still had plenty of room to continue to work if, you know, say there was another victim that was close by. And since it was such tight quarters, it's kind of like one of those tactical decision-making things where it's like, you know, your SOP says back out with so much air. But, you know, if you have another victim that's right around the corner, are you just going to leave them there? Or are you going to, you know, possibly break your SOP, high risk, high reward type of thing? But I would say that the physical fitness definitely helped me out.
Okay. Do you happen to know how long it took from fire department arrival on scene until you arrived at the victim? And then maybe also how long it took from arrival at the victim until she was removed from the structure?
It was something like dispatched at 7:01, arrived at 7:04, and there was kind of a break in communication during a command transfer from the first arriving officer to the battalion chief right around the time when we found her. But CPR was started on the back patio at 7:13, I believe.
Okay.
So we were estimating the time that we found her was probably right around 7:08, 7:09, something like that. But again, I don't really know. This is just off the top of my head.
Sure. 9 minutes from arrival. We think 9 minutes from arrival to CPR initiated. And then maybe 4, 5, 6 minutes to find her from arrival on scene. Is that accurate? Is my math right there?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Okay. You'd mentioned that you had potential reports of victims trapped prior to arrival on scene. Did that change anything for your operations, either you and your partner talking en route, or maybe you have a codified change in your SOGs for reports of victims trapped? Has anything changed when you know you have a higher probability of victims?
It definitely ups the ante a little bit. So kind of like I was mentioning with our search culture, we try to do things as quickly and efficiently as possible. So if we know that there's going to be parties trapped and we know that we have enough people, we're trying to move to having 4-person staffing on the engines all the time. But, you know, you don't always have that luxury with staffing. And in this case, we didn't. So it definitely changes things to the point where it's like, okay, are we just going to, like, how far out is our next arriving unit? We could see it on our CAD. You know, if they're pulling up right at the same time as us and there's no reports of victims, or if we find an RP outside that says, yes, everyone's out, you know, you can just go straight to fire attack and then move that search portion to the next arriving unit that's a minute behind you. But if you know that you have parties trapped, we're moving to that whole, okay, we're going to put water on the fire, because the belief is once you put water on the fire, everything gets better and becomes more survivable. And then at that point, immediately start breaking off and looking for that victim. So in this case, we had on the way there, we were told grandmother and grandson trapped. And in my head, it was, you know, I heard grandson and I immediately thought to something pediatric, right? Mm-hmm. You know, maybe 80-year-old grandma, mom and dad are off to work that day and grandma's babysitting type of deal. But once we got there and we saw that the RP was an older grandson that was just helping take care of grandmother, that kind of changed things a little bit. We're like, okay, there's probably only one victim, but we don't know for certain because we're just trying to get the job done as quickly as possible. But we did get confirmation as we were already working that it was just grandma that was inside.
Okay. And what was the end result? Did grandma make it?
The end result was we started CPR outside. They took her to the closest trauma facility. They obtained ROSC as they were pulling in the ambulance bay, and they were able to fly her to another care facility down in Denver for more appropriate care, but she only lived for another 10 hours and wound up not making it, unfortunately.
Okay. Well, you gave her every shot possible, right?
Yeah. Just do
what's a lesson or lessons that you personally learned from this fire that you'd like to pass on to our listeners?
Well, we were talking about search culture and everything like that. And as I'm learning as a new probationary firefighter in this district, I think that it is very important to be able to train not necessarily on one subject, right? So maybe your department's training officer puts out a certain skill that they want you to practice. And some people might see it as, okay, we're going to practice this as a checkbox thing. But I learned that it's also very important to be able to think on your feet. Like any good training officer has always told me, be a thinking firefighter, right? Like if you know that you can get the job done and you know that there's a survivable chance for someone and you can do more, be able to train and be ready to be able to do more. So if you have, you know, your search modules coming up, maybe incorporate it with your fire attack. Or if you're doing VEIS or something like that, think about another way that you can incorporate it for further training, right? Like if you have, you know, you're going to do a VEIS and you're struggling to get someone out of a window, think about more compartmentalization, maybe setting up a high point of something or window conversion, whatever it takes, just be able to do more than just one job and be ready for it to change on the fly. Because so often, right, like it's so honed in on the one task that you're supposed to be doing, but you got to be able to do more than just one.
I like that takeaway. I like that a lot from a training perspective, like kind of that overlap or intersectionality of different disciplines, because very rarely does everything fit nice and neatly into this box. And it's really hard, especially when it comes to fire ground skills, to divorce everything and only look at search and forget about the other parts of the fire ground, or only look at forcible entry and forget about the rest of the scene. So I think that's a powerful message right there.
Yeah. I mean, I teach part-time at the community college where they run fire academies and whatnot. And one of the hardest things when it comes to teaching the skills is actually putting them all together and, you know, changing from that like checkbox robotic mentality when it comes to training to getting them to understand why they're doing it and getting them to understand that they can do more things than just the one thing at hand.
Yeah. And we're not saying to take this to the extreme where you have a plane crash that's carrying hazardous materials and results in a fire and there's seven people in cardiac arrest, plus there's an active shooter. We're not taking this to like this impossible scenario. We're just talking about, let's make this a little bit more realistic. Is that fair to say?
Absolutely. Yeah. Realistic training is definitely great. And I mean, being able to, we have several firefighters that read a ton of the data that gets put out for the firefighter rescue survey and all that. And if you can make that training as applicable as possible for your district and just train and be ready to do hard work at all times, you know, it'll go far.
Well said. How about, has this fire changed your mindset towards the job at all? You kind of talked about how it has with your training. What about how you search or how you operate or how you come to work every day? Any other changes from this fire?
I'm kind of a, I don't want to say like a like a hoarder per se, but I have a hard time getting rid of things, right? But one of the things that I've kept in my memory folder of stuff, I got a card when I graduated my first career academy at Louisville Fire from a fire chief who's a really great mentor of mine. And in there, he put three bullet points, or it was even five bullet points of things that you should do going forward. And this is a very seasoned firefighter. He retired from a different fire department as a district chief and then took another, his quote unquote retirement gig was chief of a department at a smaller department. But in there, it says, remember, always be ready for the big one. Always be ready for, I'm paraphrasing it a little bit, but always be ready for it. And it's something that I always knew, but now that I've actually had this experience going forward, it just holds a lot more weight. And it makes me feel a little bit more prepared when I go into work, knowing that so many things can happen. I mean, and that shift in general, we had a gambit of all sorts of different calls that just really kept me on my toes in general. So I guess it taught me to just be really honed in on my situational awareness. And it taught me to really know where my limits are and know when I can be able to push my limits to really just do the best job that I can.
Well said, man. As we start landing this plane, is there anything else you want to add either about this incident or takeaways or organizationally, what you guys have changed or altered or evolved with, or anything at all?
I mean, really, I just want to say thanks to my crew for the most part. I know a lot of those guys are probably going to be listening to this later on down the road, but we had a really solid crew that day. And being a new probationary firefighter, as I'm learning, I mean, I'm super fortunate to have been in this long enough to have a lot of great mentors and leaders that have come and gone. But to be set up with a good sound crew that is extremely supportive, that is willing to do whatever it takes to be able to get the job done. I mean, my paramedic partner that I was working with that day, he's a very well seasoned guy as well. And he just kind of, you know, as a newer guy in a department, you know, you get those jitters, you get all amped up like, oh, I'm going to a fire. Oh, you know, I'm actually, holy crap, there's victims trapped. And he builds up the ante, and just having that good mentorship to just like, okay, slow down, calm down. So my crew has definitely helped me get to where I am. And, you know, I wouldn't be the same people without, or I wouldn't be the same without these people training me along the way.
Absolutely love that, man. Andy, I want to say thank you so much for sharing your experience with us. We really appreciate your time and authenticity. For everyone listening, if you or anyone else you know makes a grab, please go to firefighterrescuesurvey.com and fill out a quick survey so that we can all get smarter, better, and faster. And if you make a grab and want to share your experience with our listeners, please reach out to either Grant Schwalbe, Justin McWilliams, or myself, Nick Ledeen, and we'll try to record an episode. Lastly, thank you to everyone listening to this. Take care.